Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your favorite host back this week, Chris Gult. With me today, like always, or at least most of the time, Chris Spangle and Creighton Harrington. Say hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
There's a little bit of a somber mood now that Galt's back.
Oh, yeah, whatever. I know.
You
I know.
Miss me.
It's because he's wearing his sunglasses. It's very dark in here.
So anyway,
go to wearelibertarians.com and you'll see a picture of Galt in his sunglasses.
And we encourage you to say as many hilarious things about it as you can.
What?
Caption contest, the best answer wins a free episode of We Are Libertarians.
They're all free.
Thanks for pointing that out.
All right.
Oh, really? You don't say.
We're not charging? This is bullcrap.
We can make money off of this?
No wonder I haven't been paid yet.
So anyway. We actually have a couple questions from our listeners via our Facebook.
I can actually count
this week.
I almost need two hands to count the amount of listeners that we have. It's amazing. We've gotten three questions, and then I've heard from two other people that they listen. This is great.
Yeah.
I have at least six listeners.
Well, I mean,
I've just been counting every like of the Facebook page.
Not including our moms.
We have 120 likes on Facebook.
Really?
Wow. So, to me, there's 120 listeners, and that's how I'm going at it. Somebody right. asked me, I'm like, we got 120.
So you guys want to start with our first question?
Yes, please.
Our all listen right. ratings.
Let's do the warm-up question.
Okay.
From David Shake Cleary in Hobe Sound, Florida. If you had to choose between the two main contenders for presidency, Romney and Paul, who would you vote for and why?
Well,
If you had to choose, I would say
that at this point, you can't, there's not really a choice because if you're a Republican, Romney's the choice for you at this point, right? I mean, Paul is basically.
I feel like the question's more directed towards who do you like better, Romney or Paul?
Well, then that's easy. It's Ron Paul.
Yeah, it's Ron Paul.
Why?
I can't stand Mitt Romney. I think he is Barack Obama 2.0. I think that the differences between George Bush. And I actually agreed with Barack Obama on something this week. He said, why would you want to elect Mitt Romney? Because he's just a continuation of the failed Bush policies. And I was like,
but that's what you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we say about you. So I think when you really get down to it, when you look at results and you look at what actually takes place as far as policy goes, I don't think there's a tremendous difference between Republican presidents and Democratic presidents. I think they all try to govern, you know, authoritarian right. If you go to politicalcompass.com, is it?
Or org?
Politicalcompass.org, and you check out where all the presidential candidates are, almost all of them, Democrats, Republicans, almost all the senators, Democrats or Republicans are all in the authoritarian right quadrant. And the three of us in this show are in the libertarian right column.
We're in the crazy, you know,
the
crazy column is where we're at.
So Galt was like on the bottom of the line in that compass.
I know. I haven't seen anybody lower yet.
No.
Which is crazy.
I did see a...
I was nervous about it because some of those questions were kind of leading. They felt leading.
Sure.
And I didn't know where I was going to end up.
So, you know, when I took another Facebook quiz, you know, who do you stand with the presidential candidates? I was 97% with Ron Paul, 88% with Gary Johnson, and 11% with Barack Obama. So I don't know what Barack Obama and I agree on that 11%, but you know
that Mitt Romney is terrible.
Yeah, and Mitt Romney and I have like 40% agreement. So I think for the three of us, I think it's pretty clear that our beliefs align closer with Ron Paul's than they do with Mitt Romney or Barack Obama. So
agreed.
All right. Move on to our next question.
But I will be voting for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian. Let me make that clear.
Oh, yeah?
Because there is one choice in November.
I would probably vote for Gary Johnson if I could have that yard sign out there on the desk.
All right. I'll let you have one.
All right.
I'm giving it to you freely. I'm not buying your vote with a yard sign. Let's make that clear on tape.
I'm going to pull a Philip J. Fry and send a message to all those clowns by staying home and not voting.
Oh, my God. We're going to get
Creighton.
I'm just kidding. I'll probably vote for Johnson.
I tell you, you're getting the Lee Wright sign.
Well, you can tell your girlfriend
just kidding.
To stay
I love
home.
Lee Wright.
She voted for Newt.
She did vote for Newt.
What?
I know,
what?
I know.
She thought it was funny. She was like, he looks like a cutie pie.
Your girlfriend voted for Newt Gingrich?
Yeah.
Wow.
She doesn't listen to this anyway.
But, I mean, no.
Because why would a girlfriend be proud of this?
Because
a girlfriend that voted for Newt Gingrich.
She is her. I mean,
she is her.
She voted for him. She voted for him because.
Way to get all existential.
Well, she voted for him pretty much because he's like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Right.
She doesn't give two flying craps about politics, really. And
his name's Newt. That's like the Geico thing. Well, I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah. I'm just going to get in trouble.
All right. So, yeah. Second question.
She doesn't listen. It's okay.
From Mary Ackenbrook near Fort Wayne, Indiana. What do you guys personally think about U.S. foreign policy, and what do you believe the Libertarian Party and big libertarian politicians think about it? I would prefer less ideological answers, or at least real-world answers and ideological answers.
Sure. Creighton, do you want to take this to start off with to give us the ideological perspective?
She gave us some specific subjects she would like us to touch on. Syria seems to be the main one that she wants to know about, which we did talk about. We've talked about a couple times now.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important as a caveat before I even go on any kind of rant that libertarians are not unanimous in their foreign policy views. I know there are various strands that do not see a non-interventionist foreign policy as consistent with libertarianism. So I guess this would be the general non-interventionist strain of foreign policy is the one that I hold, and I think it's libertarian because I see war as the health of the state.
We view wars as big government programs that just spend a lot of money that need to be cut, and we prefer peace. So we can't, the three of us can't presume to speak for every libertarian because there are libertarians like Neil Bortz, for instance, the talk radio show host, who would identify libertarian. He's a lifetime member of the Libertarian Party, but he's very hawkish.
Yeah.
But when it comes to social issues and fiscal issues, he's very libertarian.
And, I mean, I know there's a lot of objectivists, the hardcore objectivists. A lot of them are they're very hawkish, and I don't necessarily know why.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say just foreign policy in general should basically be a reflection of the Constitution, a protection of the national borders. And, of course, you get into the gray area of, like, are the police actions in other countries, can they be defined as protection of American borders? And I don't think they are. I think it's obviously just, it's just, you know, power playing with, you know, chess pieces on a global scale is what it feels like. And it ends up being contradictory to our ultimate goal of keeping Americans safe because it breeds resentment through actions. Through U.S. policies get resentment to those policies.
But
and when crazy people get resentment, they blow stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
But Creighton, are Americans better individuals than anyone else in the world?
Americans as individuals are individuals. Every individual is equal in their rights.
So we shouldn't protect individuals in other countries?
We shouldn't protect them? I think the greatest protection is a protection through example. Nothing's going to incite a...
So Gaddafi is just going to stop because America is
no,
on the...
No, because Gaddafi's only
people.
Propped up because... Or Gaddafi was only propped up because of popular consent. And the minute he loses popular consent is the minute he loses his power. And you're not going to breed popular discontent with a dictator through blowing up buildings in that country. What you're going to do is probably strengthen his hold on his people. And that's a great example in Iran, where you went from a democratically elected president who was overthrown and put into power through American direct American influence through the CIA, put the Shah into power, who was a tyrant, and in overthrowing him, they put in a more tyrannical, theocratic government that's the Ayatollah regime that we have today. And then it really all wouldn't have had, we wouldn't have had to deal with all this crap if the CIA would have kept their nose out of other countries' business.
Right. I definitely agree. Most of the, many of the problems over there have been caused by our CIA and our government.
There is an important distinction to make. When you say that the American government gets discontent through its actions, that does not mean America. There is a difference between the state and the people. And it's hard right. to, and I was actually reading an article the other day, or intro to a book, I think, where the one of the things that was kind of disheartening about the Constitution is it kind of made you live in a state when they called the states. Before that, you lived under a state. Mm-hmm. After that, you lived within a state. It was like the state was a part of your social existence. Whereas before that, it was understood that it was the state. You were underneath the state. And
right, but isn't that elevation better because you're not ruled by a state? I mean, we're at this point, we're approaching a point where we are being ruled by a state. As before, where it's always been you've had more direct control.
Well, I don't think it ever stopped. I think the point that the guy was trying to make in the intro I was reading is that when they did that, when they had that rhetorical shift, it kind of changed people's perceptions of their government, whereas they were more keen to kind of lay back and let the – because it was our government. It was our state, you know. And before then, it was, you know, they had to keep an eye on it. The classical liberals were like, you know, the right of revolution and all this, Algernon Sidney, these things were kind of like understood. But as time goes on and you kind of see society, I mean, that's one of the things that gets me the most is when people compare society as synonymous with government. And
right. The actions of Barack Obama or George Bush directly reflect upon your decisions. I mean, and I think this is really to move away from some of the ideological stuff that might be what she was talking about. Some of the real world examples, libertarians believe that for every action, for every choice that you make, there is an outcome, good or bad. And when our government chooses to get involved in military issues or military situations, there are consequences. And the more choices that we make as a military, the more consequences there are. So the more countries that we invade, the more countries that we assist with weapons, the more money that we send to,
bases
to
we have.
Dictators, the more bases that we have, the more potential there is to go wrong. And if you go back and you read Washington's farewell address, he makes it very clear that, you know, we should not have a constant military vision. You know, Dwight Eisenhower, that's one of the things that he really worried about. As a 4-star general, I think he may be the only 5-star general in America. But Eisenhower, who was a president, in his farewell address, talked about the growth of the military-industrial complex. And he's basically saying that you have to be careful about growing the military industry, because when you grow an industry based on war, then there has to be perpetual war to keep jobs going. And war is not something that is a business. War is something that you do in times of emergencies, you know, in times of Hitler's invading other countries and your allies are going down and, you know, 13 million people are being exterminated. And so libertarians don't believe that if you are attacked that you just sit there and take the attack. We believe that you go out and you fight the bad guys. If China, let's say Red Dawn happened, and China invaded America, or the Russians invaded America, depending on which Red Dawn you're watching, you fight them. You fight them here, and you go and invade their country and fight them there. And you stop it. You fight to achieve peace. And what we have right now is we're not fighting to achieve peace. We're going in and having a very short skirmish, and then we're nation building. We're spending a tremendous amount of American resources to build other countries, and not just in Iraq, all over the world. And we do it with the 130 bases that we have. It's the number. It's over 130 yeah. bases, and I think there's something like 150, 160 countries. So right. we're in almost every country in the world, and those consequences are not good. You look at Libya. For instance, we went into Libya. Obama put us into Libya to fight the extermination of Libyans by Gaddafi. Well, that, you know, it's a really tough choice, and it's the same choice that we have with Syria. You want to say, yes, America should go stop this genocide that's taking place in Syria. But when we went into Libya to stop that civil war, Obama didn't go to Congress and get any authorization, so we didn't follow the Constitution when we went into that war. And libertarians believe that the Constitution is our rule of law. That's what we follow. It's the land of the law. It's not to be – it's not evolving. It's very clear. It says that if you want to go to war, then you have to go to Congress and get a declaration of war on a country. Well, they have passed over time certain executive orders that give you a certain amount of time. I think it's like 60 days.
It's 90 days.
90 days.
It's important to realize with that, because there are people who argue, well, he doesn't have to at first. He has to after a certain time. That's not true. According to the Constitution, it says under Article 2 that he is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces when called into action.
Right.
I don't know, actually.
But when was the last time we weren't – Creighton literally has a constitution in his back pocket. And by the
right.
looks
the
of it,
the last time we weren't at war is what you're going to say? Right. We've been a country for 235 years. We've been at war for 209.
Right. And so there is very little peace. And, you know, Americans
– very little peace.
Americans and especially our government as an extension of Americans are caring people. We don't want – people to get hurt. We want people when we see things like the Haiti earthquake or the Japan tsunamis. We're the most giving country in the world because it tugs at our heartstrings. We have tremendous wealth and we want to give that wealth away to help people. But using war and then nation building is not a way to give back to society. So what does the Constitution say about war, Creighton?
Under Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, the President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into actual service of the United States. And then the question becomes, well, how do you call into actual service the Army or the Navy or the militia? Well, if you go back to Article 1, Section 8, says Congress is the only one that can call Army or Navy into service by declaring war. In fact, if you look at the powers Congress has over the military compared to the president, I mean, Congress has to keep them maintained. They have to, you know, house them, feed them. All this money has to be apportioned through Congress. The president is the commander in chief. It's supposed to be for a very limited amount of time, but it does not say he's the commander in chief at all times. It says only when they're called into service. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, you know, the president can strike, you know, go and attack a nation and then get approvals, you know, 60 days later, that's not constitutional. He has to get approval before he even sends his stuff over in the first place.
And that's why many libertarians would like to see the abolition of standing armies.
Right.
Period.
That's what I was about to say.
Right. Because you've got the military-industrial complex that must be fed. That's why you see us making airplanes and warships for the Navy and the Air Force that we don't need because some congressman wants to take jobs back home.
And that's the reason the Constitution sounds so much different than today's, because they didn't design us to have those standing armies.
Right.
Yeah, well, Jefferson was – he always talked about how
stand.
I mean, if by and large, if you look at, you know, the founding generation, they were pretty not hawkish. You didn't really see much war hawk until, like, you know, the 19th century. And that, I mean, really, it's just like America was trying to – it looked to England because it was this cultural kind of like – it was everything – they looked to Europe. And at during the 19th century, Europe was becoming very imperial. So this whole – the idea of kind of an imperial nation as far as America, it didn't really come about until the mid – to just before the mid-19th century. The founding generation was by and large fairly, you know – non-interventionist to an extent. There were occasional, you know, spoofs and blah, blah, blahs, but for the most part, and especially in rhetoric, they were very, you know, non-interventionist. So when people say that America was founded on any, they try and argue that, you know, the revolution, we had to fight all this, whatever stupid argument you can find. By and large, if you look at how the founding fathers wrote, they were non-interventionist to a large extent, and therefore you have to look at the Constitution in that light as well.
So again, how do you guys deal with a situation like Syria? Are you libertarians, you cold-hearted bastards, just going to tell the people of Syria that, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to arm opposition groups. I'm sorry, we're not going to send our military in to stop Assad from killing your people. What do you guys do in that situation? Because it's easy to say Iraq was a folly, we should have never gone, we should have not done it. But it's harder to look at a situation like Syria and think, man, I'd really like to send troops in there to save those people.
Well, it shouldn't. I don't think it should be handled by the U.S. government. I think the government should promote and encourage people and groups of people to support them, help them go over there, things like that. It should be by people's free will and not by taxation and spending of military. I found something in while I was researching that Gary Johnson actually said he supported Obama's initiative to go in and capture Kony. Which I found, I don't know, I just didn't think Gary Johnson would say that. And so I wonder what he would think about Syria. I couldn't find anything. But I wonder what he would think about Syria as running for president. That'd be a good question.
I haven't looked into it, but I know that he has been sympathetic to the idea of wars for humanitarian reasons. Things like Somalia, things like Syria. But I honestly can't defend or not defend that position because I don't really know what he's said in the past.
I mean, so,
Creighton, your thoughts on something like Syria, humanitarian war?
Well, I mean, like I said, you're by and large, you're not going to get what you want, which is an overthrow of a tyrannical regime. You're not going to be able to get that and have just that through third party intervention. What you'll get is an Iraq where you overthrow a regime and then they don't know what the heck to do with themselves, and you have to in tax dollars are building light poles in the middle of Fallujah. The thing is you if you want to start a revolution of a tyrant, then really the only way to get one that's actually substantial and actually real is for the people to do it themselves, for them to emulate an example. French Revolution is a great example. They, were inspired by the American Revolution to a large extent, and they took it upon themselves. Now, there was a bad outcome there, too, for a lot of it. Yeah. And
I think also one of the answers is using the economic engine of America to undermine those regimes by trying to build trade routes into those societies, by trying to commercialize. I mean, we talk about commercialization, and it's a bad thing here in America, but some of those things are necessary. I mean, if you look at the long studying history really makes you appreciate in the time in which you live now, because when you see how fortunate we are, Chris Galt has no money. He's just a cool 21-year-old hanging out, broke like every other 21-year-old in America. He lives a better life and has a better quality of life than most kings 300 years ago because of his access to health care. He has an Android phone, which I think is a poor choice, but still better than what a king had 300 years ago. There have been acts of violence and civil wars going on for hundreds of centuries, and it's foolish to think that that will ever go away. And so what you have to do is you have to find ways that will solve these problems without more violence.
Yeah, I mean,
going to war.
Look at the 20th century. We've been doing this for, at least since the end of World War II.
Sure.
We don't have to include World War II in this. We've been doing this for almost, two-thirds of the 20th century. And it's still happening. We still have very, very crazy dictators in this region that we've been involved in for 60 years, 70 years. And, I mean, it's just ridiculous to think that if we just threw another $100 billion at it, if we just threw another tank, another battalion into these regions,
another missile,
that it's just all of a sudden going to be enough.
It's just going to create more violence. And so what you have to do is you have to find economic solutions. And use your economy, your economic engine that will benefit your people because they will be put to work, and it will benefit their people because they will be put to work and they will have a higher standard of living. And, I think that's why violence is down here in America, because people have a decent standard of living. This is one of the first times where we've had an economic downturn and violence has decreased. It's because most people live, even the poorest in America, have a pretty decent standard of living.
I mean, they used there's always talks. The Soviet Union would show images of dilapidated housing in New York, and or they'd show the Grapes of Wrath or whatever that is, where they go out to California Way and
California way.
We're going out California way. And they'll show them, but they'll show these in order to try and get the Soviet, the right. people who live in the Soviet nations to, you know, be like, yes, capitalism's terrible. Look right. what it does to the poor. And it would all backfire because in the Grapes of Wrath, they drove a car to California, which no one had in the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. unless you were super rich. And, or they were watching in all the dilapidated housing, they'd show the windows and everyone had TVs.
Right.
And everybody was like, no way, they have TVs. So, I mean.
And it's amazing because with capitalism, you look at the standard of living that we have now and you look at the Hatfields and the McCoys. Many people watch the Hatfields and the McCoys. Well, that was four generations ago, and in four generations, we've gone, you know, if you were born in 1870 and you died in 1970 and you lived 100 years, look at all the advancements from 1870 to 1970, from 1970 to now.
My great-grandma's sister, she died, I think it was last year in February. She was 103 years old. She was born in 1907. Just think about everything that happened from 1907 to 2011 and all the various increases in standards of living, all the historical events. I mean, that's a long time, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of stuff to experience. I mean, she said she remembered the Titanic headlines. I mean,
right.
And it's just it's crazy that you point that out because, I mean, yeah, that's 100 years. And that, I mean, back then they didn't even have freaking telephones, really.
I think a lot of times we don't take a minute to pause and think about history or where we're at in history and how good we have it, how good we truly have it. You can walk down the street down Indianapolis and have a pretty good percentage of not being attacked or murdered or killed. You lived in Rome in, you know, 100 AD, you were walking around and you would be mugged and you'd be killed, you'd be robbed. I mean, and the percentage, the chance of that was pretty high. So I think that's, I hope that kind of answers it a little bit. Most libertarians believe that we'd rather use capitalism to try and raise the standards of living in these countries instead of using violence, because violence just breeds more violence and capitalism can breed more capitalism.
And another thing to point out is that we also have to understand that our action, like you said, has consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that we could go into Syria and it would be totally zero sum, we would go in, do a thing, and get out, nothing else would happen, is super, super illogical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's going to be outcomes that are most likely, if we look historically, are going to be negative for American interests in the future. I mean, you're going to make someone mad, you're going to get collateral damage and you're going to breed resentment. It's going to happen. And I mean, regardless of whether or not our intentions were noble, when somebody's building gets blown up by a predator drone trying to get a sod and it actually kills a bunch of kids, those family members are going to be ignited in a rage against America because they shot the predator drone. It doesn't matter that Americans say, oh, it's collateral damage, we were trying to get the bad guy, you should be thanking us. They don't care.
In a situation like Afghanistan, the police in Afghanistan and the military in Afghanistan are very corrupt, and we are supporting the police. And so many civilians in Afghanistan look at Americans like we're corrupt because we support the corrupt police that killed their aunt, that killed their grandma, that killed their brother, that killed, you know, the villager down the street. And I don't know why most Americans disconnect the fact that if that happened to us, we would be outraged at another power that was in our country killing our family and our friends. Other people in the country feel that way too. Humans are not different from here to there. Right. Human beings, you know, humans are pretty much the same as they were in 180 versus now. You know, yeah. In America versus Russia versus Afghanistan.
I was gonna make that point. It's just like, you know, we can talk about how, you know, different our lives are compared to the past, but there are a lot of things that are the same. Humans are, I mean, they've been killing themselves since we started walking upright. I mean,
yeah.
So Americans, Hungarians, ancient Egyptians. I mean, by and large, we're all relatively the same. And that's why it's important to look to history as the outcome. We're not, America's a young country, and a lot of bad stuff can still happen to it. And we haven't even begun to see the historical themes that have hit every single country that has been a superpower in the history of man. And to think that we're immune somehow to those things happening to us if we do the exact same things that they did, I mean, that's just, it's ridiculous. And that's a lot of, that's something I think people don't really focus on. They think America's somehow different. It's immune. We are different, and we're different because we were founded on an idea of freedom. But that doesn't mean that if we go through the same exact actions as other countries in the past, that the same exact outcome won't happen.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that you have to do is, how do you change it? Sometimes there's this feeling of hopelessness that you can't change it. So start with yourself. Choose wisely when you're voting. Make good choices when you're voting for campaigns. Look at candidates and talk to those candidates. Support the candidates that you support that share your values. Don't worry about the lipstick on a pig, like, oh, this person can win because they have this letter next to their name. Choose your values. And if more people actually voted their values and voted their conscience, then I think we would have a far different society than we have now. You know, and you have to get involved with in your world. Yes, you're right. You personally probably can't bring the troops home from Afghanistan tomorrow, but you can go into your local community and you can work with local governments and make a difference there. You can work for candidates that will share your values, who eventually move up to larger positions. You just have to start with the individual, and the individual that can make the first choice is yourself.
And the politicians do respond to changes in voter sentiment before actual election days. A great example is SOPA.
And we'll talk about the immigration flare-up that's happened today and the difference in conversation between now and 10 years ago.
If you look at SOPA that happened, the Stop Online Piracy Act legislation from what? The end of last year,
mm-hmm.
Is that when it was, or it was early on in this year? Maybe. I mean, that was pretty popular to a large extent. It was pretty sound that it was going to pass, but you I mean you had enough outcry and it died. And a lot of the recent attempts to pass it also in different forms have been. So they do listen if you're loud enough. Of course, the hard thing is being loud enough. But really, I mean, if you just have to stay strong and make sure you know what your beliefs are, make sure you understand them, and just don't ever vote for the lesser of two evils because that's the only option you think you have.
Well, one of the things I like to try to do, especially when it comes to foreign policy issues, are to change the perspective and the point of view. So let's say Romney gets elected and he becomes a tyrannical, evil ruler that kills Americans. And
check out the cover of The Onion if you're walking around downtown, by the way. Romney visits local factories, shouts at workers to go faster.
But let's say that happened. No one can doubt that China has influence here, right?
Right.
I mean, they own banks now here.
They own a tremendous amount of our debt.
Yes. So let's say
they
China
own your roads.
Because China has they have vested interest in America. They come in and they say, we will save you, Americans. We will stop Mitt Romney from killing you. And they start bombing Washington, D.C. They put troops in Chicago and New York and Texas. And, I mean, think about how that would fundamentally transform our country. I mean, for the rest of our history. China would never leave again.
Right.
And we would, and most people would see China as attacking America
and everyone,
in general.
Yeah. I know I'm living in Indiana, and there's a Chinese base in Chicago, and they've killed my friend that lives in D.C. from the bomb. And
nothing unites a country more than an attack.
Right.
I mean, look what happened after 9/11.
Would rise up against that.
Yeah, and even if they didn't like Mitt Romney, they'd be like, you're blowing up our country?
Yeah.
Get out of you crazy.
There are better ways to handle it than military. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, think about it.
I liked your suggestion with the economic, using the,
right.
You know. All right, because we are the biggest economic power in the world.
Think about it this way. When the Canadians finally do invade, and the Canadians come down and they take over Indianapolis, and they take over the mayor's office, they leave Greg Ballard in office in Indianapolis as our mayor, and the Canadians stand there and they tell about today, buddy. And then, like, listen here, buddy. Here's what you're going to do.
Oh, this is not traditional. Not traditional.
And then, so Ballard's still in power. The city council's still in power. But the Canadians are telling them. And next thing you know, the only thing you can buy in the stores is Molson beer and syrup, maple syrup.
Moose head. Moose head's good.
And the
though.
Only movie you're allowed that. To buy is Strange Brew. And
you got to watch Jim Carrey all the time.
You eventually resent this. And, you know, a lot of these people who are hawks are the first ones to join a resistance movement against the Canadians, eh? So just think about it. Because it's going to happen.
Just think about it.
I mean, it's just...
I'm a prepper for when Canada invades.
The ultimate, I guess...
You're crazy.
I've got Dawn to take care of all the maple syrup.
I guess we can just end
on... have any Canadian listeners.
We can.
I hope not.
We need to move on to another topic. I guess I'll just end it with... If you're going in with the idea that we have to attack them there so they don't have to attack us here, that, you know, we have to stop these tyrants because all their power, all their corruption will flood over and they'll become crazy and they'll try and attack other countries and maybe us and our interests or Israel or this. I mean, the idea that we can just go in there and bomb them out, it's really the thought process of a child. I've said that before. I mean, it's really not putting much critical thinking on it. It's just basically saying, we don't like you, we're going to blow you up, and we'll figure out what happens after that. And it's not the attack them there so we can't, they won't attack us here, is ridiculous.
Sorry.
Stop laughing at that picture of me.
Whoever has the next topic up.
Go to wearelibertarians.com. That'll take you to our Facebook page. And you can do two things there. You can leave us a question that we'll answer and talk about again next week because we like actually knowing that people are listening. And you can also check out the picture of Galt as he records the podcast today. He's sexy and he knows it. So, but he does not work out. So, so let's move on. You were... Galt was not here last week, and he was fit to be tied because he wanted to be here every single week.
The
situation with
the
Paul campaign.
Talked about Rand Paul.
I know. Well, it's not like we couldn't. We had to.
I know. I wanted you guys to wait.
And so
it is impossible.
Yeah, we had to. Listen, you got to show up if you want to play the game. Hey, you got to be on the field, dog.
I don't blame you. I was just disappointed.
So what is your position on Rand Paul?
All
do
right.
you listened last week, right?
Yeah.
So do you agree with Creighton that it was a necessary political move, or do you agree with me that he's a dirty, dirty traitor?
So normally, I usually take extreme polar views. I don't sit on the fence. But I see both sides to this right now. I see Creighton's point of view. If Rand keeps voting libertarian, then he doesn't care who he endorses. He can say that, you know. Rand Paul could say that libertarians are dirty and evil, and as long as he's voting libertarian, he doesn't care.
Right.
I disagree with that because I think that public perception is very important, and the public perceives that libertarians are selling out.
Libertarians.
That even libertarians in the Republican Party don't believe enough in Gary Johnson and libertarians.
I'm somebody that works with candidates
and they
a lot,
in neocons.
And we hear all the time that I'm not going to support a libertarian because you guys are just Tea Partiers, and I don't like Sarah Palin and the Tea Partiers. And we're like, well, we're not Tea Partiers. I mean, we share some values, especially economics, with a lot of Tea Partiers, but on social issues, which is the reason you don't like them, we're different. And I think that this reinforces that sort of mentality, you know, that we're somehow just Tea Partiers, you know?
Yeah. So I understand 100% why Rand Paul did this. Because there are two outcomes of this election, right?
Mm-hmm.
Romney wins or Obama wins.
Or Roseanne Barr wins.
Could happen.
So if Obama wins, Rand Paul has a clean record with the Republican Party. You know, he didn't endorse Gary Johnson when Rand would run for president in 2016. They can't use that against him. Well, Rand Paul didn't even support the Republican and let Obama win, you know. If Romney wins, Rand Paul has a great position, like Creighton said, to be that other voice against Romney and conservative slash libertarian. Keep it on the top part of the political compass instead of the bottom right.
Mm-hmm.
But saying that, I think it was the wrong move. I think that the way he did it was wrong. I think the things he said were wrong. It never should have happened on Sean Hannity. It never should have happened without Ron Paul supporters knowing first what was going to happen. And it shouldn't have been a surprise, I guess. Because, oh man, I have like 1,200 friends on Facebook, and 1,100 of them were hating Ron Paul all week. I mean, or Rand Paul, not Ron Paul. But I do like some of the things the campaign's put out recently to defend it. The citing that Murray Rothbard endorsed George Bush, that doesn't make Murray Rothbard less libertarian or less anarcho-capitalist.
But I saw somebody like saying, oh, well, Rothbard was senile at that point. It's like, he may have been. I don't know. But
he wasn't. The dude was a genius.
It was a political move. And
such a fanboy.
As Jack Hunter said, if you can sacrifice, as long as you don't sacrifice principle for political gain, it's fine. So
okay, well, I see this as a troubling first step.
I do too. I don't like it,
and
now
it must be watched.
I definitely have my eye on Rand Paul. I will be checking his voting record every week. I definitely because I don't have the faith in him I have in Ron. I haven't seen the principledness in Rand Paul as I have in Ron Paul because Rand's played the political game. And that's not always a bad thing, as we see in Game of Thrones. I love citing Game of Thrones,
every
but it's true.
Episode, man. You can,
but it's true.
It's like 6 degrees
you may
of
be
separation
right. You may
or something.
You may be Lord Eddard Stark.
No,
you may
dude.
Be the most you may be the we, most principled. You may be the most the right man you might be, but you will not win the game.
Galt's
you
know, going to come in. Galt's going to come in here
play
one,
the game.
One
right.
of these days, we need to do a whole episode where we can just cite any random thing about the universe and
no.
see if Chris Galt can bring it back
come
to
in
Game of Thrones.
There is legitimate connection here, though.
One day he's going to come in LARPing as Ned Stark.
If Rand Paul become, I'm okay with him endorsing Mitt Romney to become president, as long as when he's president, he's principled. I'm afraid. Of
I
that.
have
That's
found all. Someone else who disagrees.
Oh.
I have found someone else who had disagrees with Creighton.
Okay.
Well, I know like 90% of all of our listeners probably disagree with me.
Right. So I will play this person that disagrees
oh,
with Creighton
whatever.
Right now.
You know what? I have to caveat this. But
I think that's a dumb idea.
I mean, I can disagree with whether or not I think that, you know, this whole thing is going to work. Whether or not they think that being all lovey-dovey to the higher-ups is going to work, because I don't think it's going to work. I don't think that they're going to come around, ever. I think the only thing that's going to be able to change the positions of the Republican Party is, you know, efforts like that we've had with the Ron Paul campaign and future things similar, and basically just old people just start dying, and they can't vote
wow.
anymore. So I feel like that. I don't think that if Ron Paul's team thinks they can just kind of be nice to the establishment Republican Party that it's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they'll ever – they'll just be like, oh, Ron Paul, we're glad to have your support, but
– That's why I look at this entire thing as it's trying to take over the Republican Party as complete folly.
Oh, wow. So let's recap
like
that.
Creighton
that
with Creighton.
That was
Hang
from
on.
Episode 9,
wait.
Three short weeks ago
yes.
when Creighton disagreed with himself.
No, see that's taken out of context. It really is, though, because my point there was that if you want to be nice to the higher-ups in order to change the platform, mm-hmm. it's not going to work. Rand Paul's being nice to the higher-ups so they don't attack him like crazy so that he can become he can
viable
gain more influence. He's not trying to change. He's leaving the platform changing to his dad. I don't think it'll work if they're trying to change the platform. I have never said that Rand Paul's trying to change the platform.
You, sir.
Well,
Did you see the results of the Indiana State Convention?
Oh,
you, sir, are the Mitt Romney of We Are Libertarians.
No, I'm not.
No, but the
it's not a stretch.
Mitt Carey sitting right
no,
over there.
No, it's not. I don't think Rand Paul is doing anything other than trying to promote his future political endeavors without, and as long as he does that without changing his voting, that's what I'm okay with. I don't think he's trying to change the platform through this endorsement. I think he's leaving that to Ron and the delegates at the convention.
I would like to thank listener Tim McGuire for texting me furiously at 9:30 this morning going, you got to listen to this section of this podcast. He totally contradicts himself. I was like, yeah.
All I was going to say is Creighton doesn't believe in platform changes. I'm not sure how – I don't see candidates actually running on platforms, but it is a good way.
Yeah.
It is a good way to – if you're going to have a good platform, it's a good weapon to use against some neocon that's not going to
– And that's the thing about platforms. The Libertarian Party of Indiana does not have a platform. We have a statement of purpose and principles. But we don't have a platform on issues because we believe that should be up to the individual candidate.
Right.
And platforms generally, the national party has a platform, and a lot of times the national platform on abortion, for example, is kind of noncommittal. It's kind of middle of the road, and it doesn't really take a stand one way or the other, but it does say that the government should not be involved in abortion. Well, that doesn't inspire pro-choice or pro-life people. And so if you have a pro-life candidate, then pro-choice people use that section from the platform to attack that candidate and vice versa. And so platforms, in my opinion, are just really useful for the other side to attack your candidates. And I think platforms are a complete waste of time.
What are you doing?
Professional broadcaster. I forgot to turn off my phone.
Terrible. So anyway, what I've been trying to say for like 5 minutes now, the Indiana Convention.
I wanted to tell you.
The Indiana State Convention was almost a complete failure for Ron Paul. Almost, I say. Because at the last minute of the Indiana State Convention, they moved to amend the platform. And it passed unanimously to add Audit the Fed as a platform for any Republican Indiana. For any Republican candidate in Indiana. I had to wait for Chris's yawn.
Just
you
want really,
to say something?
Yeah.
That is a success, period, to have Audit the Fed as a platform issue for Republicans.
Was it rawhide or was it a pig's ear, the bone that they threw you guys?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Voicemail.
Oh my god. Silence your phone and your noises. Jesus. Your ringtones are insane.
It's like a Looney Tunes factory over
Creighton
there.
And I are just like, what is going on in here?
I just for a second I thought Bugs Bunny was going to come in the Viking outfit.
All right. So
it's from Game of Thrones. That's all.
No, it's not.
No, because I'm an expert.
That's all. When you said we can't change the platform, it won't work, etc.
No, I meant you can't change the platform by being nice to those who don't like you. It was what I was trying to point out. I never said that you can't play political games through basically stroking egos, but that isn't an attempt to change the root politics of the party. That's an attempt to kind of interweave yourself within it for future changes. That was my point. And that's why it's taken out of context.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Speaker of the House has promised Ron Paul that they will vote on Audit the Fed before he leaves office.
Cool.
Because it is his
last year. Is it audit?
Audit.
Like his audit?
Audit. His audit, not some kind of...
Watered down.
Yeah, and they're not going to... Are they going to put it in a different legislature?
They're going to vote on his audit.
I will say...
They promised him before he leaves office.
Moving on to the next topic, are we done...
Not that politicians don't break promises, but...
Right. Not
hopefully.
That... Moving on to the next topic, before we went to air, so we haven't really researched into it a lot, but I did read the New York Times story today that came out on the fact that... Obama just signed an immigration or is going to sign a change in immigration where basically 800,000 illegal immigrants will be allowed to stay in the country if they're between 16 and – is it
– You 16 hit the silence button.
16 and – 16 and what is it, 20-something? I forget the exact age. But they're basically young kids who are brought here as young kids to the United States by their parents illegally. They've grown up here in America. They have been productive citizens. They've graduated high school. They haven't gotten into any trouble. Some of them have served in the military. And so these 800,000 young people will be allowed to stay and will not be deported. Now, the conversation today from the right is actually kind of encouraging because it's not about whether or not this is a good idea or not, and it's not – well, we should just ship them all back or some sort of, you know, shallow argument like that. The argument is whether or not it's constitutional for the president to do this because it is a unilateral action by the president as opposed to an act by the Congress. And I felt that that was something that was encouraging for me is that it's not an argument about the policy per se. It's about the fact that the president shouldn't be allowed to do this without an act of Congress.
That is a direct result of Ron Paul.
And I'm not going to – yeah, it's a direct result of libertarians
and
foreign policy.
When have they ever thought that?
Right.
As an argument against
– and it goes back to what Creighton talked about earlier where if you change the voter base, then you can get Weasley politicians to do what's right.
And it's been happening not as super amount, but it's been steadily increasing how much that's happening. I mean a lot – I mean for the first time that I can remember when he invaded Libya, it wasn't – just that, oh, this is a bad, blah, 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 John McCain's over there, yay. But there was still that strain of Republicans that were just like, you know, you didn't even ask us. And they were upset about it. And, I mean, would that ever have happened?
No. I mean, 10 years ago.
From Republicans?
10 years ago when Bush started putting forth the – when Bush started putting – it was probably about 8 years ago. When he started talking about his immigration plan, it was something pretty similar. And it was about whether or not the policy was right. This time it's about whether or not you can actually do the policy the way that it's not written in the Constitution. So I thought that that was really a positive. As far as the policy, what do you guys think about it? I'll start. I think personally – I don't care. You know, like this, you know, the
immigration's not one of my
immigration is just one of those things that some people get real wigged out about it. They get real uptight about it. They're very passionate about it, but I don't really know why.
A lot of people are afraid of the word amnesty.
Right.
And I'm not. I think it's a, from what I've read and heard
the way
from you guys,
the way I look at it is this. Free markets require free interchange of goods and people, and immigration should not be a hindrance onto someone entering a country.
Right.
There shouldn't be a huge roadblock. No, you can't just have, you know, at least if you're going to have a government, you can't have people. You can't have people bouncing off the system and basically working it. That being said, I think one of the reasons people get most upset about immigration is two things: welfare and minimum wage policy.
Correct.
If you don't have either of those, then you don't really have a reason to complain unless you're racist. And I'm not saying that is to just throw it out. I'm just saying that's all that's really left.
Right.
So the thing is I don't really care either. I get if you're from like Arizona or something, you might care because then you see immigration at the same time you see people's head getting cut off. I mean, and that's also a direct result of American drug policy. So a lot of this stuff is kind of, I think, the reason I don't care is that they're focusing on the wrong problem.
Right.
You're literally looking at the effects of a cause, and the cause is usually, I mean, it's American
welfare
drug,
and drug
war,
policy,
the
right.
welfare state, minimum wage laws, these things right. that basically are the real reasons people are getting upset. You can't get out competed for jobs because Mexicans coming over will work for less than minimum wage if you don't have a minimum wage. And if you're upset that they're willing to accept such a bad paycheck, well, that's human nature. I mean, that's just
it
real
makes things
reality.
Cheaper for you.
Yeah. So
I mean, even if they do work, for
you can't be upset that they're mooching off the welfare state if you don't have one. There, you can't have. I mean, you're not going to have super terrible drug. I just read a number: 47,000 people have died in the past 5.5 years from the Mexican drug cartels.
We have a civil war in the state beneath us in Mexico, and we don't really focus on that at all. We don't
talk
even
about
think
humanitarian.
About it. Yeah, exactly. And I think that is exactly why I don't really care that much. You know, I look at it and I say I'm not an open borders person. I'm not. You know, a lot of libertarians just want totally open borders. I know Gary Johnson feels that way. I believe you do have to have some system for counting citizens. I mean, you just can't not have borders.
Spangles, spangles, spangles.
I know. I'm sorry, you little anarchist.
Well, I mean,
the fact is that...
Oh, practically right now you have to have borders.
But you can't build a wall because that doesn't work. There was some idiot congressman running in 2010 who was doing a campaign commercial in front of the fence in Southern California. And he's walking along the fence talking about how he's going to finish the fence. And every panel of the fence that he walked in front of was a patch because someone had taken a blowtorch or a saw and cut a hole in the fence and ran through it.
They did it on Penn and Teller once. They said, how long does it take to get through a fence? And it took like, 10 minutes to go over it, under it, and through it.
Right. And the fact is that if you make it easier for people to come here, and for the first time, let's get a couple facts out about immigration. And this is something that conservatives are not really going to crow about. Obama has increased the amount of border patrols and border security. It's one of the reasons why a lot of the crime is not spilling over into Mexico. We are at an even rate where Obama in the last 4 years has exported – or exported, not – he has deported. Okay. Exported. What the heck? He has deported more illegals than George Bush did. And for the first time, our entry and exit rate of foreign nationals is neutral. And part of that is because our economy is not booming, which is a huge concern. So it is not the horrible problem that we thought it was, several, years ago. And I look at it and I say, I'm not an open borders person, but I'm not a build the fence person. The reason immigration is screwed up is because the federal government runs it, and it takes 10 years or more to get here. It takes $10,000 to $20,000 to get your citizenship. It's just stupid.
If I was in Mexico and I wanted to immigrate here,
right,
I would do it illegally.
I mean,
10 years to wait to get in?
10 years?
Even years, period.
Are you and your family going to be alive in 10 years in Mexico?
No. I'm coming through the fence.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's just the one thing. It's just like, why does it have to be so difficult? I mean, from my understanding, there's quotas. Like, you're not even allowed. There's only so many that are allowed to legally immigrate each year from the world, not just Mexico, just the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just like, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to have a, super stringent code on how that's kind of overbearing, you're kind of just begging it to happen. I mean, you can't prohibit
it. The entire world is going to move to America if we open our borders.
You're not going to be able to prohibit. I mean, if you prohibition just doesn't solve anything, and that's essentially what it seems like we're trying to do is kind of quasi-prohibit immigration, at least unless it's within the realm. I mean, it's kind of dumb. I think if you want to really talk about immigration, let's make it a little bit easier before we start saying, this stuff that these people are terrible. I mean, I don't know.
When many of these people, they're our peers, it's, almost a million of our peers who we're going to compete with for jobs for the rest of our lives, who are, not committing crime. They're going to school. They're living the same lives that we're living. And I just, I look at somebody like that who grew up as an American and they're an American with the exception of one piece of paper that says they're American. And I go, I don't want them to go back to a life that they don't understand. I mean, to have to go back to, let's say your family immigrated from Tijuana, Mexico, and then you're here and you are a productive member of our society. Then we're going to make you go back to Tijuana where there's a civil war.
I guess the question becomes,
for what?
Are you American? Are you American if the government doesn't say you're American?
America.
No.
Does the government have to say you're an American to be American?
No.
What is an American? Is it the government giving you a piece of paper saying you're American? Because that's ultimately what I mean. If you have to get a piece of paper from the government in order to become a legal citizen,
you have to have a piece of paper to graduate from college.
I mean, I'm just saying. Does the government? Does the Obama admit to our right leaning friends? Do we really think that Obama has to say you're an American in order to be an American? Because he's the one who would have to sign off on ultimately the paper.
All right, let's do this. If you've made it this long into the podcast, please go to wearelibertarians.com and answer Creighton's question. Let's get opinions from the audience, and we'll read whatever responses or questions we get next week. So wearelibertarians.com will take you to the Facebook page.
We do love answering questions. We spent the whole first half answering questions.
That's right. And
please ask us questions.
Hopefully we answered Mary's questions. If not, that's the best we can do. Sorry.
Also, if you are a candidate for any office, we'd love to have you on here and interview you and talk to you.
Yeah.
So feel free
to our wide fan base.
Send us an email.
Yes.
Or
we're very influential.
Messages. Yes. We are huge.
We are the premier libertarian podcast in downtown
growing,
Indianapolis.
Guys. We are growing.
It's, you know,
we're the largest libertarian podcast in Indiana.
That's right. It's like Donald Trump. We're huge. We're successful. We're very good. We're the best.
You're fired.
He has the most limited vocabulary of all time. He's like, it's excellent. So, yeah. So check it out. We usually record on Thursdays, but the last couple of weeks we've tweaked it a little bit.
Yeah, we need
so
to fix it.
Forgive us. Hey, this week it was his fault. So
last week it was his fault.
last week it was your fault because you weren't here.
That's my fault? You still could have done it on Thursday.
The week before that was my fault. So next week we got to blame Lauren, the intern. So
you mess with her so much.
I know. It's awesome. There's no point in having an intern if you can't haze them.
Fair enough.
So I hazed you when you worked for me, when you worked for Ed Coleman,
you did.
And I was your
boss. I couldn't sit in your chair.
That's right.
Do we do anything?
That's awesome. Well,
I sat down in your chair, and Evan was like, nope. Chris told me you would do that, and you can't do that.
I was leaving for the day to run an errand, and I knew Galt was coming to meet with Evan, who's Rupert's campaign manager, and another person. And so I knew the first thing that Galt did when he walked in the office was go to sit in my chair behind the desk at the executive director's chair in the Libertarian Party of office headquarters. And I told Evan, I said, no matter what, under any circumstances, Chris Galt is not allowed to sit in my chair. And Evan goes, why? I go, there's no reason. I just want you to screw with him so he can't sit in my chair. So he walks in. He goes immediately for my chair to sit down, to feel important, to look like the big captain in the office. And Evan goes, what are you doing?
Right. I was like halfway into the chair.
Right.
I was just almost there.
And then what did he say?
He was like, you can't sit there. I was like, what?
Galt got all mad. I was like, Allison and Evan just went, ah! It was the LOL face from the Rage comics. So anyway,
cool story, bro.
Yeah, thanks, ass. All right, guys. Well,
do we do Idiot of the Week anymore? Whatever.
We don't need to.
Who's your Idiot of the Week?
I don't have one.
I don't either.
I guess Creighton.
Obama.
Creighton for being the Mitt Romney flipper flopper that he hates.
Not,
all right,
not
let's
flip flop.
Let's take a show vote. Who thinks Creighton's the Idiot of the Week? Raise your hand.
It's not a flip flop.
2-1. You lose.
2-1.
It's not
democracy
a
rules.
Idiot.
We take away your voice.
All right, so make sure you check out the Facebook page, wearelibertarians.com.
Share this with your friends.
Share this, maybe not this episode, but some episode of the podcast. So next week we'll do better. Thanks, have a nice week. When you get up out of bed, is hit that streets are running and try to meet the masses. Go get yourself some cheap sunglasses. This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.